All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
Fox to Wemby. Wemby tries a three, puts it up, off the mark. Ananobi the rebound. It's over. It's over. Knick fans, this is not a dream. Your long, long wait has ended. Go ahead and cry. After 53 years, the Knicks are finally NBA champions once again.
This is the Zabe Cast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. And with that, one of the most incredible runs to a championship in sports history of recent memory came home on Saturday night in San Antonio. The New York Knickerbockers are kings of the basketball world. Welcome aboard, everybody. ZabeCast with you on a Monday, June 15, 2026. And I will admit right out the top here, I made a huge mistake by giving up on the game on Saturday night. You might have seen my last missive on Twitter or X, in which I was so frustrated by the non-foul call. Not just non-flagrant call, but the non-foul call on dirty, dirty Wemby sticking his giant size 18 triple E foot right underneath Jalen Brunson in a clear and obvious violation of the safe landing zone principle that the NBA has established after Zsa Pachulia fucked up, whose ankle was it for the Warriors back in the day in 2017. It should have been called. And I was so frustrated going, okay, not only did they not call it in this game, but they sure as hell are not going to upgrade it to a flagrant one, which would knock Wemby out of game six back at the Garden. At the time, with, you know, the Spurs leading, I thought they were going to win the game. And I felt like the NBA's thumb was on the scale. But you know what? The NBA, even with their thumb, perhaps, and Scott Foster refereeing the so-called series extender, you know what they didn't have? They didn't have Jalen Brunson. Jalen freaking Brunson. Too many Jalens in the NBA, you say?
Why so many Jalens in the NBA? I think it's way too many Jalens in the NBA. Went to sleep and it was 10 Jalens in the NBA. Woke up and now it's 30 Jalens in the NBA. We got Jalen Smith on the Bulls. And Jalen with a Y playing for the Timberwolves. Think it's a joke, but I'm actually earnest. Tell the truth, that ain't even really scratching the surface. Cause there's 607 players on the court playing. The 16 teams got a player named Jalen. And it's really two Jalens on three teams. That's gotta be like 50% of the league. In the crib trying to figure what it all really means. I know they mama raised them like my son is my king. And I could probably recognize him. all bifacial, and I wouldn't be surprised if they was all biracial. Look, why so many Jaylens in the NBA? I think it's way too many Jaylens in the NBA. Went to sleep and it was 30 Jaylens in the NBA. Woke up and now it's 80 Jaylens in the NBA. We got Jalen Hood up on the Lakers, Wilson on the Nets, Jalen Smith is on the Pacers. Can't forget Jalen Durant is on the Pistons. Another Jalen out of Sacramento where the Kings is. Bridges, Harris, Williams on the Thunder. About to place bets on where the next one finna come from. My money on New York, the Chicago, cities with the most white baby mamas far as I know.
And the NFL, well, the best of the Jalens is an undersized, slightly chubby, left-handed point guard who, yeah, maybe he dribbles too much, but son of a bitch, does he hit shots. He hits shots from all over the place, from all angles, in ways that make you say, what the? Somebody guard that guy. Jalen Brunson, your MVP of the finals, as he simply took over down the stretch. Wow. Where to begin on this? We got Nick Lochner from The Clean Sheet coming up to talk World Cup. USA has won their first game with authority, a 4-1 drubbing of a Paraguay side that should not be taken lightly. Nick will explain for us in just a few minutes. But first, the Knicks are your NBA champions. And I want to take a moment to go, okay, stop. Look what this team did. Look at the run they went on after falling behind 2-1 to an utterly ordinary and forgettable Atlanta Hawks team. They only lost one game after that 2-1 early series deficit, and it was only because the president had to show up and ruin the karma. Okay, I'm not going to get political, but it's just a fact. It put a weird vibe into the building. And that was it. Down 2-1 of the Hawks, and they sweep through the Sixers and the Cavs and almost swept the Spurs. Incredible run for a team that doesn't have a superstar. Oh, they got a star in Brunson, and he was the series MVP, but he is not nearly as regarded or exalted or glossed up like many NBA superstars are. Because he's short, because he was not picked in the lottery, because the Mavericks gave up on him. Oh, yeah. Think about this. This is a great tweet. The Mavericks drafted both Brunson and Doncic, Luka Doncic, in the same draft. Luka first, then Brunson at the end of the first. They didn't want either one of them. Now, it was under Cuban they got rid of Brunson, or they basically said, we're not going to pay you nearly what you think you're worth. So they let him walk. The Doncic trade was after Cuban had been sidelined because he had sold the team, and he thought he was still going to have some say in things, and if it was up to him, he would have never traded Luka Doncic, but they did. So they had Luka and Brunson at one point, and they only got back one first rounder. Shut. Jesus Christ, Siri. I'm doing a podcast here. What was that about? Anyway, they only get one first-rounder back. 29 games total of Anthony Davis and Max Christie in return. That is a generational bag fumble right there. So the Knicks win the NBA title on an unbelievable tear, blowing through the teams in the East, handling the Spurs in 5 games without a true superstar. A star, yes, in Brunson. A highly paid B star in Karl Anthony Towns, but not the kind of super A-list, top of the NBA superstars that we had all thought, well, you need at least one, if not two, maybe a third would be good as well. Nope, they did it with guys that know how to play the game and play together. It's a likable team. I know you can hate a lot about the Knicks and the New York mouthy fans. Oh, the Knicks, man. And, you know, there was a lot of damage that went down right after the Knicks won the championship. Police cars being set on fire. There was some very high-profile assaults on individuals. But then again, it's New York. That kind of shit happens on Tuesday. So you can hate Knicks fans in general. They're mouthy. They're New Yorkers. Fine. You can hate Stephen A. Smith because of how he's just always been Mr. Knicks guy. You can hate the celebrities that don't even have to pay for their own tickets. I tweeted this. I said, I couldn't believe that Ben Stiller admitted, well, they just give me these tickets courtside. I couldn't afford them, he said, which is not true. He may not want to pay for them, but somebody tweeted, the fact that super rich people don't even have to spend their money for the things that cost a ton of money that are very rare and valuable, like courtside tickets, is still something I can't get my head around. It's a great point. You can hate a lot about the New York Knicks phenomenon and the ecosystem and what they are and the media treatment of them, but just look at the team. How can you not love this team? This team was starting out in the hole in every game. They trailed by double digits in the first quarter of every game in the series. The Spurs led 72% of the series, and they ended up winning in five games. Now, this is also an indication of, well, this is how sports works. It's not how many minutes of a long-form contest or series you win. It's do you win at the end of the game? And as I've said before about the NFL, when it comes to do you go for it on fourth down, don't go for it on fourth down, the analytics usage of, well, over the long term, this is a superior analytical play to go for two here or to do this or to do that. I always remind people, a football game is an episodic moment in time in which there is a winner and a loser, and it's final. And there's a series of them that you add up the wins and losses, and that's how your season goes. So you can't totally apply just, well, long run, it's better to go for two here, or it's better to go for the touchdown first. Because these are episodic moments in which there's a winner and a loser. Same thing in the NBA. All you got to do is be leading when the clock hits zero. And the Knicks were leading five of the six games, and that's, or four of the five games. And that's why there's going to be a huge ticker tape parade in Midtown Manhattan. But it's a fun team that tough as hell. Didn't give up when they were getting blasted in game three. Didn't get down and frustrated to lose their cool when a lot of stuff went against them. When a lot of things that should have been flagrant fouls were not called. Like the first one by Wemby when he shoved down Jalen Brunson. Brunson is just mentally tough, physically tough. He keeps getting better. He's creative as hell. He hits circus shots, and he is so humble. That when Ernie Johnson, with the microphone at the podium, handing out the MVP award, tried to get a little bit of something out of him, it was a terrible interview. It was like almost painful because that's how humble Brunson is. Brunson's wife, you should Google her. She is a sweet, very attractive girl, adult woman. But she is not some model. You know why? Because she was Brunson's high school sweetheart. And he has stayed loyal to her. That's a cool, cool thing. So, it's a likable team with a very likable MVP. And they played their asses off. The other thing about the Knicks that kind of surprised me, or I just appreciated, was how all of their role players, when they would come in the game, they wouldn't play timid. In other words, sometimes you watch a guy who you know is only going to get 6 minutes a night. He comes into the game. He might get past the ball. He'll quickly pass it to somebody else, one of the more highly paid players or one of the stars, and then just kind of go set a screen or something. No. All of the weirdos that come off the bench for the Knicks, like Landry Shamet and his triangular head. I look at that head. Head! It's another I Married an Axe Murderer reference with Michael Myers. Head! What is that? It's a giant triangle. Landry Shamet comes in and plays like he's meant to be out there. Same thing for Jordan Clarkson and his weird braided rope strings hanging from underneath that headband. Alvarado is amazing. When they went to the combo of both Brunson and Alvarado in the backcourt, so they had two ball handlers to relieve some of the pressure, it turned everything around. Mitchell Robinson. Mitchell Robinson is such a bad free throw shooter. He is comically inept. He shoots these blistering line drives that barely get above rim level. And when they go in, you're completely amazed. They've developed a strategy often to hack a Mitch because he sucks so bad at free throws. But he can rebound like a mofo. And he doesn't jump particularly high. He's just good at getting in there. One of the big offensive rebounds that the Knicks got in winning game five was from Robinson when he got in there, tangled up with Wemby, and somehow just got an arm up to tip the ball to himself. And he's such an interesting looking dude. Kind of scary, but like he just woke up or something. That hair is kind of weird and wild. And he broke his pinky right before this series. But they play him. And when he plays, he doesn't play scared. None of these guys do. Karl-Anthony Towns is super likable. He is of very high intelligence, very high on gratitude in life. Been seeing a lot of videos lately of NFL players, former NFL players, bitching about how much they pay in taxes or how, well, you see $100 million, but it's really only $50 once you get done with taxes and agent fees. Shut the fuck up. Karl-Anthony Towns has the best, most grounded perspective on life. And then you got OG Anunoby and Hart, who are, I think, incredibly underrated as players. So it's a good team. It's a great team. What a run. What a run. Just blowing through everybody. The comeback, the tip by Anunoby. Brunson, your MVP. I'm all about it. Now, to Wemby. Wemby is now on my list of, you're going to have to show me you're more than what you've shown so far for me not to hate your guts. Because at first, I had not seen or heard much from Wemby, and I saw a few sound bites along the way leading up till now, like a lot of people who don't watch the NBA on a regular basis starting in November and listen to every Bill Simmons podcast about the NBA. From what I had seen and heard of Wemby, I'm like, I kind of like this guy. Sounds smart. Sounds normal. Okay. He's dirty. He is dirty AF. And it's not just the foot he slipped under Brunson. Although, as I watched that play multiple times, I started to see, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Brunson kind of put his foot forward too when he's coming down when he did not have to. And it kind of emblemized the nature of today's NBA. It's defender and shooter playing footsie to try to draw a foul. And so Wemby is dirty. You got that play. You got the push of Brunson. He did get called for a flagrant one. He also had that weird kick stomp motion that almost obliterated OG Anunoby's knee. Thank God it missed. And then he is being a petulant little bitch during the anthem, folding his arms, disinterested. I know he's not American, but you live in America. You make your millions and hundreds of millions of dollars in America. You could easily stand at respectful attention. Plus, you're from France, right? We just had the anniversary of D-Day. You're aware of that, aren't you, buddy? Apparently, for a couple of the games, he ducked out of the arena entirely for the anthem. It's bullshit. I'm not saying you got to put your hand over your heart and sing it because you aren't technically American, but the arms folded thing, fuck that. So Wemby's on my list. on the announcers front, first of all, let me back up. The ratings have been fantastic, and the final numbers are going to be fantastic. Part of it is, yes, Nielsen has changed the way that they count viewers, and so everything has been enjoying a 10 to 15% bump. But no, this has been a very highly rated series, and the NBA is fine. The NBA is very healthy. Those who are in the get woke, go broke, nonsense bullshit, no. It ain't happening. It doesn't mean the NBA is perfect or there's not things that I would like them to change or just stop fucking doing. But overall, it's a healthy league. And I think the Knicks winning without those two megastars that most teams are chasing is good for the league to say, hey, it can be done. Here's how you can do it. Use their model. So that's number one. The ratings are good. They're going to be very, very good when the final numbers come out. On the announcer front, I like Mike Breen a lot. He's called some of the most iconic NBA games. I honestly think he's slipping a bit in that he's getting less descriptive. He's using more and more sort of stock phrases. Like, tries to get it, won't go. Basic stuff that could be more descriptive. That's a nit to pick. I still am very Breen positive. I gave you my thoughts on Jefferson and on Legler. They're fine. Whatever. Here's what I can't understand. Why can't they just call the things they see plainly without this sort of overriding suspicion that they're worried about getting called by the league office to be told, hey man, we don't like you saying that. For example, Anunoby commits a blatant double dribble in which he blows by Wemby at the free throw line extended because he put both hands on the ball in the middle of a full stride dribble and then resumed dribbling on his way to an attempted dunk that was blocked at the last minute. Wemby put his arms out like, what the fuck? And the three referees, none of them blew a whistle. It's impossible for me to believe, first of all, on the officiating front, that none of them saw that. I believe that NBA referees are clearly, if not instructed, I think they are obviously aware of, hey, if something looks like it's going to be a cool highlight, probably let it go. Because it looked like it was going to be a sick stutter-and-go highlight dunk for Anunoby. But he traveled. Total double dribble. And none of them called it. But the announcers, when they showed the replay, wouldn't just say, well, that's a blown call. Or I can't believe they didn't see that that was a double dribble. They kind of tiptoed around it and they kind of laughed and they went tee-hee like, oh, I guess that's why. That really was a good fake, wasn't it? Yeah, because it was illegal. They wouldn't call it that. De'Aaron Fox gets a foul, gets a flagrant one for pushing Josh Hart in the back on a layup. It's a dumb play. These guys who push dudes in the back, and Robinson got called for one of those as well, a lesser push against Wemby, you're going to get caught. The referees will see that, and if nothing else, they'll see it on replay. It's a dumb play. And De'Aaron Fox just had a game full of boneheaded, idiotic plays that cost the Spurs the game. And yet what can't Breen or Jefferson or Legler say? That's a dumb play. I just want them to say it. It's almost like they don't, there's too much subtle, almost unspoken PR going on in some of the commentary. And it just sort of drives me crazy. Last ad about the series. Did you see that Monica McNutt, quote, apologized, unquote, to Taylor Swift? Sort of, but not really. This was after McNutt was caught on a hot mic during a TV timeout for the Knicks radio broadcast saying, who's that down there? Is that Taylor Swift? She's not a Knicks fan. Get out of there, girl.
Is that Taylor Swift down there?
No, I think Gray was just saying her name for no reason to distract me.
No, that's her.
Yeah, but where?
With that long ponytail. Ain't that her in the blue? Yeah, I literally was like, that's her. She's not a Knicks fan.
I'm recording
her
right now.
Get out of here, girl.
Well, she is as much of a Knick fan as one would expect for somebody who is also, hello, a global icon who's busy doing a worldwide tour that grossed more money than any musical act in the history of time. Sorry she hasn't logged enough games for you, but she has relationships with former Knick players like Amari Stoudemire. There's a clip that surfaced of her at a Madison Square Garden talent show when she was 15 years old, singing. So she's every bit as much of a Knick fan as Larry David would be. But the bigger point is, would Monica McNutt say that if it was Beyonce who suddenly showed up for a game to sit courtside? Right. Also, who are you? A former WNBA player that fills this role that the networks wanted, which is we need more black women on ESPN. Who do we got here? Oh, here's one that's a little bit sassy. You're Monica McNutt. You're a nobody. Taylor Swift is Taylor fucking Swift. But in the apology, which really wasn't, she kind of danced around it saying, well, it was my understanding that, or I wasn't aware that, dot, dot, dot.
So we got to talk about the elephant in the room. Nothing crazy, but we got to ask you. Okay, so I read some of your comments, and they are coming for you.
Girl,
in the comments.
Swifties, I appreciate your passion. I said what I said. And here's the deal. If I'm wrong, I am wrong, apparently, because she's got an OG Amari Stoudemire jersey.
Only in New York. Hold on one second. Why do y'all got to... Only in my city, guys.
Right. I misspoke. I did not know. But here's the deal. Context, I literally just did a piece on Celebrity Row. I've been with this organization for 5 years. I know these folks. Ben Stiller, his wife, Christine, like Spike Lee, Fat Joe. Like, I had not seen her here this year or last year. And we just saw her in Cleveland with her fiance. Obviously, Travis supports the Cavs. She didn't have any Knicks paraphernalia. So I did not know of her Knicks loyalty. But shout out to T Swift. Like, we could be united in orange and blue. Like, it's fine.
Okay, I love that. So you're standing on it.
But I mean, I did not know. I apologize if I'm wrong. And apparently I'm wrong. And that's fine. But I did not know. Because we've seen, come on now, every celebrity that's a Knicks fan been in the building this year.
Timothy Chalamet.
Come on. So it's all good.
Now, we got to put it out there. So you said that she has a OG jersey.
There are pictures of the Amari Stoudemire era. That's where the origin story is. So shout out to her, because that means she's been in the trenches. I had just not seen her. But I'm wrong. Do you think, Taylor?
So we got to ask, too. Did anyone step to you at the light?
Did you see how the way that game ended? Nobody cared about this at all.
So you're thinking, okay, it's not that big of a deal. Let's move on.
I know. I knew it was a big of a deal on the internet, but I was too busy enjoying the actual game, because I got it like that.
It wasn't a, hey, you know what? I got caught up in the moment. I shouldn't have said, get out of there. Because there's a lot of people that were front runners. Fat Joe and others. Maybe they're there every game. Maybe not. There's no minimum number of games that you should have to be required to attend to be a celebrity on Celebrity Row at an NBA game, whether it's in New York or LA. But I just found it comical that checks notes, Monica McNutt was firing in on Taylor fucking Swift. Okay, then. All right, quick break when we come back. The clean sheet, EPL, my man Nick Lochner, USA, USA, absolutely going through Paraguay like they were wet tissue paper. You are listening to the Zabecast. Let's talk casino for a second. MyBookie.ag has a full Las Vegas-style casino right on your phone. Blackjack, roulette, craps, slots, video poker, all of it. No flight, no parking, no guy next to you who hasn't showered since Thursday. And they have live dealer games. Real humans on camera dealing cards and spinning wheels in real time. You can watch the shuffle. It's not some random number generator. It's an actual person running an actual table, and you're sitting at it from your couch. New players get $25 in casino credit automatically with promo code ZABE, just for making a deposit. Free money to try it on them. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state.
Balogun, can he get inside? Still Balogun, Flo Balogun!
has ever put together. This was a 20-plus pass sequence from back to front, side to side. And you think, are they just going to see the game out? Well, they're going to see it out with an exclamation point. Gio Reyna outside of the boot. Far post. Just strong, strong.
Time now to talk some soccer with us of the Clean Sheet EPL, Nick Lochner. It is being called, Nick, by some, the greatest 90-minute stretch of technical soccer in U.S. men's history. Are we getting carried away, my friend?
No, Zabe, that's a fact. Now, what I would say is there have been better moments like Landon Donovan scoring in the final minute to propel the U.S. to this round of 16. But in terms of quality, in terms of performance with a lot of pressure, that was the best performance the U.S. has put together, arguably, in their history.
It was a lot of fun. And by the way, thank you for letting me text you incessantly during the matches. I trust that it's not an imposition to you, but I'm like firing off texts to you and your boy Patrick. You know, I'm like, look at this, look at that. And it was just fun to watch. I felt like for the first time ever, Nick, we were one of the real world powers and we were just toying with our opponent. And you told me something I didn't know, which is, hey, man, Paraguay is no joke. They're street fighters. They're defense first. They had a great run-up to this World Cup, and our lads went through them like shit through a tin horn.
Yeah, yeah. Paraguay is really good, and they're really good defensively. Paraguay beat Brazil. They beat Colombia. They beat Argentina, all in their qualifiers leading up. They had an amazing run in the South American qualifiers. They gave up 6 goals in a stretch in their qualifiers that, you know, put them at the top of South America in terms of defensive squad. You said it, they're street fighters, and it didn't look like any of that in that match. In fact, you know, if you go out to the X machine out there and you look at what people are saying, you can kind of tell. Like, there were a lot of people saying, "Oh, Paraguay, they don't have very much." No, Paraguay's really good, and that was an amazing performance by the U.S., particularly in the first half.
I felt like there were times in which our guys were passing up perfectly decent chances to try to get an even better chance, and I kept saying to myself, you should probably take that shot right there. Yeah. But they obviously knew what they were doing, and I've seen some of the charts now that you talked about, you know, the analytics about percentage of passes completed, about the way they went about it. Like, this was a great performance.
It was a great performance. And to top it off, at the end of the match, they had a 26 in a row pass completed goal, which just kind of put the cherry on top. There's some good videos out there on X that you can go look at. But it was 26 passes, all completed with an amazing finish. With the back of a foot, just brilliant. I mean, it really was. And the other thing that this does is it takes the average fan who, you know, doesn't really know what to expect this year. And maybe there's been a little bit of, why doesn't the U.S. handle teams better? Why are we tying Jamaica or losing to, you know, these teams in the Caribbean, what's going on? And that was a butt kicking of a really good South American team.
Yeah. All right. So
it just brings the momentum.
Here's a dumb question. Under the new system, does this basically mean we're through to the knockout round, or is there more that has to be done?
95% through.
Really?
Is what 95%. And here's why. So there are 4 teams in each group, and there are 8 third place teams that will advance. Okay. And the tiebreaker is points. Okay. So the U.S. has 3 points. There will be other eighth-place teams that have 3 points. But by winning by 3 goals, that's a really good goal differential start for the U.S.
First of all, points, when you say points, just so people are not confused, that does not mean number of goals. It's a win is worth 3 points, and a draw is worth 1, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Correct. So, yeah, and then there is goal differential as well, which would help as a tiebreaker. Okay.
That's correct.
Next match, and by the way, got the printout of the FIFA sheet right there. This is the best visual sheet ever that has day by day what matches in what cities they're going to be. The actual times of the kick times are too small for me to read, but I can go look it up at least. So the next game or the next match for the U.S. is against Australia Friday the 19th, and that's in Seattle.
That's in Seattle, yes. Okay. And that's against Australia.
How good is Australia?
Australia is considered about the fourth place team in this group on paper coming in. Their world ranking, I want to say, is around upper 30s. The U.S. sits, it fluctuates. They update it after every match they play, but the U.S. sits around 14 to 17. Australia is around 40. Paraguay was better than Australia on paper, but Australia just beat Turkey last night, 2-0 late our time. And that was a big surprise. Big surprise.
Okay. So they're not
two.
Yeah. They're not chumps, Australia, but they're not that good.
Correct. In fact, the U.S., for those who want to place a little wager, the U.S. is minus 168. Australia is plus 445. A draw is plus 310.
Ah, okay.
And so of course, it gives you a little bit of an idea of, I mean, yeah, the U.S. should win the match. Worst case should draw.
But it's soccer. And like,
but it's soccer.
With the first goal, it was a, oh, shit, I just kicked it in my own net type of goal.
Correct. Correct.
That stuff happens. And, of course, the place to wager responsibly here at the Zabecast is mybookie.com. Promo code Zabe, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. So if they win that match against Australia, then can they sit some guys, rest some guys against Turkey on the 25th?
Should be able to because of that goal differential we were talking about. Turkey will be playing Paraguay, who we just played. So it's possible Turkey could get to 6 points if we were also to get to 6 points. But I think the key thing here, Zabe, is two interesting parts to this. The third game of the group stage, which we're in. So the Australia is the second. Then there will be a third game of the group. Both of the teams in Group D play at the exact same time in that third game. Ooh. So neither team knows what they might have to do to finish top of the group or second or third.
Right.
Yeah.
I see that. I see that that's how they've got it laid out. This is why I love this chart so much, is every group has their final game simultaneously, because you don't want that gamification of, well, let's see what they do first, and that will then determine what we want to do.
That's right. And so, it's really important for the U.S. because the round of 32 knockout is all predetermined on where you go based on where you finish in your group. So the first place team in Group D, which is the U.S., will play a third place team from one of basically, I believe it's 5 different groups.
D, E, F, I, or J.
Correct.
What it says. One.
Correct. So you're playing a third place team.
Right.
If and you finish second,
mm-hmm.
you will be playing a second place team from Group G, which could be Belgium, could be Egypt.
Eesh.
And both of those teams will most likely be, quote unquote, better than a third place team that you might otherwise draw.
Okay. All right. So we're off to a good start. Now, Let's talk about this Pulisic injury. Pulisic. Yep. I'm saying that wrong. Christian Pulisic. Am I saying that right now?
Yeah, Pulisic.
Pulisic. He got kicked in the calf. How serious is it?
I don't think it's serious. I think it's a no different than a calf bruise, and it's one of those things. If he needed to stay in the game, he would have stayed in the game. It was 3-0. And I think, what's the word, out in an abundance of caution.
Right.
You know, he is prone to injury. He's had his share of injuries along the way. But I think in a World Cup setting, you know, this isn't a strain or a pull or anything like that. And the other thing is he's got several more days here. He's got a full week to recover from when it happened.
Okay. Let's talk about this guy, Folarin Balogun, who had, did he have two of the four goals or just one?
Yeah, two of the goals, yeah.
Two of the goals, including a beautiful upper corner rocket.
Yes.
As he made a probe into the box. He's from England. His backstory is fascinating because his mom was trying to board a flight in New York back home, and she was so pregnant, the airline said, we don't feel comfortable with you flying. You're going to have to stay here. So he was technically born in the United States. Now, he then right away moved to England. He has come up through the so-called Three Lions Academy system for soccer, but he had a choice of like three different countries he could have technically played for, and he chose the U.S. Now, the haters are going to say, well, it's only because he couldn't make England's team that he chose the U.S. I've heard counters to that narrative, which says, no, he actually wanted to play for the U.S. Tell me your take on this guy who is really, really good.
Yeah, my take is, well, and not only is he United States and England, but he also has Nigerian nationality.
Okay.
So he's got three nationalities. He had three places he could play. I think he thought his prospects in playing in the United States would be better than in England, his opportunity to play. I think that was a big part of it. And I think it's just like anything else. They call it recruiting when they're looking who's going to come to your national team. So I think you and I had exchanged messages on this today. 42% of all the players in the World Cup have some dual nationality.
Wow.
42%. 42%. So in fact, I wrote the numbers down here. There's 1,244 official players on these teams. 528 of them have dual citizenship. France has the most with 16 of their 26 players. And when people say, well, how does that work? Think of Senegal. Used to be a French colony, and all of these people have dual citizenship. And I don't want to claim to say I know how it all works, but I know there's dual citizenship between France and Senegal because of this colonization in the early 1900s. Yes. And so that's just one example of how that works. So a lot of the French players could be playing for Senegal. And in fact, a lot of the Senegalese players are from France. So it's not uncommon at all. And in the United States, the U.S. has 14 players of their 26 that have some form of dual citizenship. But the U.S. also loses players because of this. There's a really good player. They call him the Milwaukee Messi. His first name is Esmir. He plays for Bosnia-Herzegovina. He grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin. Then he played for the Chicago Fire. He played for the Milwaukee Wave Youth Club. And he liked his chances and his prospects better to earn a spot on the Bosnia-Herzegovina team. And his parents actually lived there and then fled during a war. So it's not uncommon at all.
Yeah. And you know what? That's part of the beautiful game, isn't it, Nick?
That's right.
It's a big melting pot of people from all over the world. Like when I first saw Mbappe for France, I'm like, that dude ain't French. Because in your mind, you're thinking some pencil thin mustached cappuccino, you know, finger out Frenchman. Oui, oui, oui. but he was actually born in France, but his dad's from Cameroon, his mom is from Algeria, and this is part of the beautiful game. He's fucking great, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about hydration breaks. Man, oh, man, hydration breaks are getting annihilated by those who love the game of football, soccer, as it was supposedly meant to be. And I'm looking for a quote here. This from Jurgen Klopp on the so-called hydration or cooling breaks. Quote, football is being held hostage by executives in air-conditioned offices. These so-called cooling breaks were sold to us as a shield for the players' well-being. It's nothing more than a gilded cage built for sponsors.
100% correct.
So,
yeah.
Who allowed this? What?
It's a FIFA. You know, I love the World Cup. This is a FIFA money grab. It's right. A FIFA money grab. It started with Qatar. Well, actually, it was before that. I know South Africa. There's always been concern around hydration. But in today's world, especially when you have games in Miami, you have games in, you know, in outdoor state. Kansas City is going to be really hot.
Sure.
And there's always been the option to do a hydration break. There have been arguments that it's unfair, and what's the criteria to decide which game gets a hydration break? This is the first time FIFA came in and said, we are going to have hydration breaks in every game to make it equal, because we know we're going to have to do it in a significant number of games anyway. And that's why they did it. And then there was early on arguments saying, well, it's not going to be a commercial break. It's going to be a real quick, it's 3 minutes. You'll notice the clock keeps running. It's 3 minutes, and then they add it on to the end of the half. And then somewhere in the middle of all that, Fox said, oh, we're going to cut to commercial. And it really pissed people off in the first match, because they actually came back late from commercial break and the ball's downfield. It really sucks. And I will say, okay, I think I commented on Twitter on the clean sheet. You know, the score after two quarters is 1-0, you know, yada, yada, because it feels like a four quarter game. And one of the cool things, in my opinion, about soccer is it's a very free flowing game. There's no timeouts. When the momentum is going in one direction, you have to rely on your players on the field to have leadership determine how you're going to adjust to fill gaps if you're really causing problems or having problems caused. You can't just take a timeout and say, hey, we got to change up our formation. Right. We got to do this. We got to do that. Now the players, you know, in this hydration break, sprint over to the sideline because they have 3 minutes and they're getting all the coaching, and it changes the entire flow of the game. And I will be really curious at the end of this thing. I'm sure somebody is doing this, looking at the statistics of what happens the first, say, 3 to 5 minutes coming out of a hydration break, because I think it's going to help. It's going to support better managers, because they're going to be able to make mid-game adjustments. And I would bet you could look at data that says the possession or the style of play or who's had the momentum has shifted more now because of this break.
Yeah. It's changed so much of the game, because, like you said, when one side is struggling and they're drowning out there, it's up to them to drop anchor, dig in, and figure it the fuck out.
Yeah.
And these hydration breaks are essentially automatic quarters, and they just bail teams out that are starting to get overwhelmed by a team that is playing superior, that has better fitness and everything else.
That's right.
Like you said, because they apply it across all the games, even in LA where it was like 72 degrees and fine, they were stopping halfway through. So I would love it if this was so unpopular that FIFA dropped it going forward. My fear is that it will only metastasize, Nick, and end up in other parts of international soccer.
100%. We in the U.S., from what I've been hearing, people are kind of, it's just a couple, it's just a little break. It's not a big deal. If you follow any of the European pundits, they're losing their shit. They can't stand it.
I know. But when it comes to money in FIFA, they know absolutely no shame. I show you this at the Meadowlands or at Levi's Stadium, the press box.
Yes.
As condiments for the free press food. And the condiments have black tape over the brand names on the labels of the mustard and the ketchup and the hot sauce. I wouldn't believe it if there wasn't a photo of it and there weren't reporters saying, yep, this is how far FIFA goes.
It's real. And Zabe, I don't know if you saw this. This is brilliant. So they have named, you'll see on the broadcast, like it's not called Levi Stadium. It's not called SoFi Stadium. It's Los Angeles Stadium. It's Santa Clara Stadium.
Yeah.
In Santa Clara, Levi's, they created a big banner to put over the Levi's logo, but they did it in the shape of the Levi's pocket with the little droop.
Right. The little
Batman-looking shape.
Right. So you can kind of tell what it is, but it's just so...
It's crazy. It's really crazy. They really, really try to control stuff.
All right. So the tickets are another issue that people have been talking a lot about. And there are some stadiums in which they are definitely not full. However, the trend right now seems to be picking up. And as we get further into this, my guess is that tickets will become harder, if not impossible, to get. And the price is going to be through the roof, especially if the U.S. makes it far once we get to the knockouts.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. In fact, there's a lot of, I'll call it, pundits out there and media types who have been really quick to say, hey, look, there's some empty seats. Hey, there's ticket problems and all of this stuff. And if you go look at what they're saying today, they're like, holy crap, I was wrong. Not only are stadiums fuller than I thought based on reported numbers, but ticket prices are starting to rise. And all you people who were waiting for the ticket prices to drop in last minute so you could go get a half price ticket, it's going the other way. And, you know, here's what I would say. The process and the policy of how FIFA handled tickets it sucks in a lot of ways for the average person. It really does. I know a couple people who work for FIFA. They would say they're even somewhat frustrated by this. I know people who have bought tickets, they're frustrated by it. But what I also will say is there have been basically 99% of the tickets are sold. 99% of the tickets are sold.
Yeah.
When people are saying they're open seats, part of the problem is it's just like an NCAA basketball game. You look behind the bench in the NCAA tournament and the tickets have been sold, but you know, they play two games, so there's open seats, or there's a lot of people who are up in the luxury area having a beer, they're not sitting in their seat. The sun's bearing down on them. It's hot. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, look at all the seats right at midfield. Well, it's the tickets, it's a 68,000 seat stadium and the number comes out 680 tickets were not sold for that game. That's 1%.
Right. Yeah, when they give the top line number, they're like 180,000 tickets have gone unsold. Okay, well, how many matches are there? And how big are the stadium?
Yeah.
And well, run the math on just what that percentage is. So, yeah, I understand that what FIFA did was they created their own secondary exchange and then made both buyers and sellers pay a 15% fee on the coming and the going of the transactions on the secondary market, which is dirty pool because I guess in all the other secondary markets, only the sellers pay that 15% fee.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. I know a guy who bought, he's gone to the World Cup for 30 years.
Really?
He's been going the whole time. He's got a lot of friends. He's been all around the world to go to these games. And I talked to him a couple of weeks ago and he's just really frustrated. He bought 48 tickets. Okay. 48 tickets, four games. He bought four tickets for 12 different games. He shares them with people. He people pay him for them, but you know, it's his family, it's his friends.
Sure.
And it's all spread out. And he said, there were two games that he wanted to change and he went out to that, seller market exchange and he's like, screw it. I am not giving 30% away on these tickets. I'm going to find another way to make this work. And so he was explaining to me how that whole secondary market worked. And it's crazy, you know, and it's sad because it takes away from the experience, but what's the saying? Don't hate the game or the player. Just
don't hate the player. Hate the game.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the process and the policy sucks. But it sure isn't seem to be taken away from the environment or the energy or the fans or the fan fest or the beer gardens or the energy of what's going on in the tournament.
So is this guy Gianni Infantino, the new head of FIFA, is he better than old Sepp Blatter? Worse? About the same? They all look like they come from the same evil villain factory, these guys.
I think they do. I think these guys... So the answer is, it's all the same. It's all the same. And I think the thing what I don't know is, if you ran FIFA and your goals were to expand soccer around the world, the easy thing you could do just to run the FIFA and the World Cup would be to go play games in Europe all the time. Or to, you know, come to the U.S. or go to South America, go to Brazil again.
Right.
Because they all love it. They have the stadiums. Everything would work. But what they're trying to do is expand to the world. So now if you're in his shoes and you've got all of these different countries competing to get the World Cup, what laws do you go by? What morality do you go by when you're working with Russia and China and Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the United States and Germany and Brazil, and they're basically throwing money at you, saying, "Here, we want to host, and you know they're saying we'll install the greatest rail system that we'll spend all this money on and we'll employ all your people." Or in Qatar, they built 8 stadiums, or
they had slave labor in Qatar. People died building those things.
I don't want to overspeak, but I like thousands.
Yeah, it was
big number.
It was bad, but you know every country is corrupt. It's just how corrupt. Are we a little corrupt? Are we super corrupt? And because FIFA has to navigate all of those countries in this tournament, I would say it does get a bit challenging. So maybe I'll cut him a little bit of break there. This was the most interesting thing that happened during the U.S. match. The enemy of my enemy may just be my friend. You know, Nick, how much I hate replay in all of its forms. However, VAR or video assisted review in soccer, hated by most, was used to correct a flop by a guy on Paraguay that overturned a yellow card for one of our guys. And I've been reading how some people are saying, whoa, you weren't really allowed to do that, but they did anyway. What do you make of that whole situation?
New rule. First ever. You know what they call it, Zabe?
What?
Mistaken identity. That's the term. No, seriously, that's the term they use, mistaken identity.
Okay.
This is a new thing for VAR. It's to address flopping. It's to address this exact thing. Around most of the world, they do now penalize flopping, but you have to see it in real time, and they call it simulation. So if you were to take a dive, they call it simulation, and you could get a yellow or a red card for simulation to discourage you from doing it.
Right.
But, you know, unlike the NFL where you have all these referees all around the field, or the NBA where it's a small court with three refs, you've got one guy running up and down the middle and two guys on the outside, and that's it. And that's a big feel. So it's hard to see everything.
It is crazy that there's three refs, essentially. And there's only one ref. The other two linesmen, they have limited authority. So,
correct.
Yeah. And the pitch is huge. It's massive.
It's bigger than a football field. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. So this is interesting. So this mistaken identity is specifically designed as a flopping killer.
Yes. Yeah. And that's how it was applied. And so in what you're talking about, Tim Ream, a defender for the U.S., went after Almirón from Paraguay, and it looked like a close play where maybe he touched him, maybe he didn't. Almirón took two more steps, threw his arms in the air, and fell down.
Yeah.
Ream got a card.
Ream missed him by a foot easily.
Yeah. Oh, it was plenty of room.
And then the Paraguay guy, like you said, took two steps and he's like, hey, wait a minute, I think I can sell this. I'm just going to fall.
He can then put it under the misidentity and caution Almirón for a simulation.
Hey, Mark, I got to say, I love this part of the technology right here, if this ends up being what happens, because, so look, that's what he's doing right now. So
cancels the yellow card, Ream, gives it to Almirón.
And they reversed it on VAR. So this is fascinating. This is going to be a real challenge for me, because the enemy of my other enemy could be one of the greatest allies ever in eradicating this scourge. I mean, shit, the NBA has worse flopping now than soccer, and they're not doing anything about it, Nick.
100%.
At least soccer is doing something about it. Okay, some quick, what do you think? What'd you think of Mauricio Pochettino's shirt?
Business casual is what I thought. I mean, I had to go look it up because, you know, all that stuff is, you know, there's the team brand, right?
Okay.
And I guess it was Boss. And they have a whole, cotton breathable clothing line, I read, all by Boss. And, yeah,
it was just a blue shirt that was wearing. And it had like weird lapels, and you're looking at it going, what is that? All right.
Business casual. I didn't like it. Coach. I didn't like it.
Okay. What'd you think of the field at SoFi?
I didn't have a problem at all.
It looked great.
Yeah.
And I saw videos about how they had to construct it. And for every dipshit football player that's like, well, they did it, why can't we do it for the NFL? I'm like, watch the video. They had to bring in like 2 foot high crates that are like cubes, that are like 6 foot by 6 foot reinforced plastic cubes as a base layer. Then they put this sort of like a tarp over top of it that was water permeable. And then they brought in dump trucks of sand. And they had hundreds, if not thousands, of workers with skid steers and a bunch of other heavy machinery to then spread the sand out on top of all this. Then they brought in the turf, which was specially cut and rolled from turf farms. And then they had to put grow lights on top of it and rotate that for weeks ahead of time. And then at the end of the day, you got to realize these are 165-pound little soccer players running around. They're not 300-pound linemen digging their cleats in to lean against somebody to try to keep them from killing the quarterback, tearing the shit out of this grass. It would never work in the NFL.
It would not. I agree. It would not work. What I will say, though, is I like the fact that FIFA and a lot of the European leagues, top leagues in their countries do this. There's consistency in the pitch at the top level, in the field at the top level. And, you know, no secret, I'm a Wisconsin guy. I know a lot about the Packers. Yeah. Lambeau Field and how they use natural grass with synthetic turf and the quality of it to handle 300-pound guys. I question why the NFL doesn't have a standard.
Well,
why they let each stadium do their own thing.
The NFL is cheap, and obviously Lambeau, like Philly uses the same system. It's like a 30% plastic field. It's got 30% plastic fibers, but it requires at Lambeau, and I've seen this before, not just grow lights once the fall sets in and it gets cold quick, usually October. Yep. They also require the heated pipes underneath the field itself. And so it's doable, but they're playing one game every 2 weeks at Lambeau. And it's a stretch to keep that thing playable deep into the winter. Philly is a much less severe climate, but they're the northernmost real grass field in the NFL. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do. But I get it. The players would like real grass. The injury numbers, they're really not conclusive, despite what the players think when it comes to synthetic. So whatever. What'd you think of the anthem by Dan and Shay? People are saying this was maybe the greatest rendition of the national anthem ever sung.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars.
I thought it was great. I don't think for me anything passes Whitney Houston. I mean that was phenomenal. I think Chris Stapleton was phenomenal. There's been some great anthems. This one is up there. I don't know if it's the greatest.
All right. What'd you think of Katy Perry and Justin Trudeau getting
cringe? Complete cringe.
Can you believe that the biggest pop star we had in America, circa 2009, 2010, is now cozy with and dating the former Prime Minister of Canada?
I mean, can I believe it? Yeah, because I mean, my opinion, they're probably pretty good for each other. It's a crazy thing. Here's what I thought was, first of all, was cringe. Secondly, what I thought was crazy is the same day, Justin Trudeau, the former Prime Minister of Canada, his team played in Toronto.
And he wasn't there to watch.
He wasn't there. He was in Los Angeles with Katy Perry at the U.S. team. He cared so much about the Canadians.
He didn't even go to their
match, the first ever hosted World Cup in Canada's history. And he's sitting in a luxury suite with Katy Perry and LA. Oh,
he's a narcissistic socialist. So what do you expect? I just don't like the fact that our Santa Barbara, California born, all American girl, the Miss I Kissed a Girl and I Liked It, with, you know, fireworks shooting out of her titties. That Katy Perry. I don't like seeing her with this little foof from north of the border, but that's just me. Okay. Last ad. This guy, Freddie LA7, who has blown up on social media because he started raving about how amazing America was as he was touring the South, going from site to site. And he's like, this is great. This is great. This is great. And now people have really gotten behind him to hook him up with stuff. One time he tweeted about, I just discovered Ella Langley. She's amazing. I can't believe it. Next thing you know, the real Ella Langley is private messaging him and is going to meet and greet him at an Ella Langley concert. Bullshit. J.J. Watt hooked him up in Houston with this amazing baller hotel suite. I'm like, okay, he's a German in America who's loving life in the South. That's great. I think we've gone too far, Nick. There are other Germans and other Dutch and Swedes and who knows who else who are rattling around discovering the America beyond the coastal elites that are not getting this much. We got to slow down. That's just my opinion.
I agree. However, I love following this guy. I've been following this guy the whole time. I love when he walked. He was holding the Vince Lombardi trophy at the New Orleans Saints. The Saints gave him
touch the Lombardi?
Yes. Yes. Oh. And then he was at Pelicans. He was standing at the center court of Pelicans. And then he was in Death Valley at LSU Stadium. I mean, this guy's been all over the place. Zabe, I will say, so Freddie is kind like there. He has now become what would the word be? A adjective? People are trying to find the other country's Freddies.
Oh, okay.
So, hey, who's the Japanese Freddy? Who's the Japanese guy or the South Korean guy who's over here doing the same thing?
I think I saw a Japanese social media account that was raving about going to some Tex-Mex restaurant and getting free chips. Bowl after bowl of free chips and salsa, and they were completely stunned that they were free. And the language translation was like, these chips were not earned.
Right.
They're like, they were just free, and they couldn't help eating them. I love it. Yeah, fucking America. We will show these people from all over the world the real America beyond the New York, LA coastal elites. And
hey,
they
can
will.
Can I add one more thing to that, Zabe?
Yes.
So in the reverse of that, okay, the fan, there's this guy, this famous Argentinian influencer named El Scarso. Okay, real guy. You can go see this. And he decided to identify the least known player of the World Cup. And he identified a guy named Tim Payne, who plays for New Zealand. Tim Payne, right before when they were doing their last friendly before getting here, this El Scarso blasted Tim Payne's name across his, I don't know, 20 million followers, 50 million followers, whatever it is. And Tim Payne's social media went from 5,000 followers to 5 million in 48 hours.
Get out.
Yes.
So he kind of identified what he deemed the Mr. Irrelevant of the World Cup.
Yes. And then when New Zealand got here, El Scarso went to Miami and they met and shook hands and hung out before the match. He hung out before the New Zealand match with Tim Payne.
That's crazy.
I mean, so that's kind of the reverse. This whole world of social media, and it's Freddie and the Japanese guy with the chips and this El Scarso. It's a whole different, it's just so interesting how they're just capitalizing off this stuff.
And then you got the Tartan Army, a.k.a. the Scottish supporters.
Scotland's on fire! Never defense is never fire! Scotland's on fire! Never defense is never fire! Scotland's on fire! Never defense is never fire! Scotland's on fire! Na 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 na
na na na na na na na na na na na na na na na na na was a great idea. They won their match against Haiti, correct, last night?
Correct.
Okay.
And I will say Haiti, for a lot of the match, seemed like they outplayed Scotland, actually.
Really?
Scotland got a goal, but Haiti had their chances, and it was kind of nervy all the way through.
The only thing I know about Scottish soccer is the line from I Married an Axe Murderer with the great
Mike Myers.
Mike Myers. Scottish football, great on paper, crap on grass.
Hello and welcome to Scottish Soccer Hooligan Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Gray.
And I'm your other host, Ian Dinklage. Hey.
All right then. Tonight's topics are Scotland's soccer team, great on paper, crap on grass.
Also on tonight's show, hey? New techniques in dart throw. Hey, it's a bungee.
So Scotland has not been in the World Cup in a stretch.
It's been a while. It's been 26 years.
Yeah. Fucking great.
Yeah, this and they're great. And you know, so they got their win, and we'll see if they hold on, because their group, that was their quote unquote easy game. Their group is not easy for them coming up here. They've got Brazil and Morocco, who played to 1-1 draw, and a lot of people think both those teams could go to the semifinals.
All right. It's called the Clean Sheet EPL. Nick Lochner writes it. You can find it on – where can they find the actual clean sheet?
So you can subscribe. It's Clean Sheet EPL. Dot Beehive, BEEHIIV.com. But I think if you put it in your search engine, just make sure Clean Sheet EPL, and you could even type in my name and it should pop up.
All right, very good. We will check in periodically, but we're off to a cracking good start here for the World Cup on multiple fronts. And stop feeding Freddie LA7 so much good stuff. He's gorging too much at the trough of American generosity. Let's spread it around a little bit is all I'm saying.
Love it. Love it.
All right, Nick. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, Abe.
Take care.
Cheers.
All right, we've had a lot of fun today on the Zabecast. Let me leave you with one more little thing, which is worth thinking about. Social media is very, very dangerous if you don't keep it in the right perspective. And I can't believe I'm going to play this clip from Ben Affleck, who I wouldn't consider a great deep thinker, but he makes a great point about how social media is doing things that we as humans were never meant to experience. Take it away, Benny boy.
Though that many choices is overwhelming to the mind. Like, we weren't made, I don't believe, evolutionarily, and as human beings to, like, you know, we're supposed to be living in like a village and see about 100
yes.
people in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
Right. That's the vast majority of human history. That's how we did it. And I still feel like in a way that's how we're socialized. It's why, for example, if you're feel left out of a group, it's very painful, because like in, you know, thousands of years ago, if you got left out of the village, the group, whatever, and they didn't take you to hunt, you died. Right.
Oh
you
God,
needed those
really?
People to live. And so
it hits something really limbic
feelings,
inside
like
of you.
And even social media, for example, you're looking at stuff and you go, damn, why is everybody else's life so good? And I'm seeing the life you're advertising looks so fucking cool.
Yeah.
And my inside life feels like shit. That also is like a basic primal thing. And I think that's what, and you know, this stuff kind of touches, But the amount of information now that comes in, because really now everybody's a celebrity, right? Everybody is a celebrity. Everybody is followed. Everybody's life is out there. And
there's newborns. There's 4 months old and 1,100 followers.
And it's really, like, 1,100 followers is kind of, it's not any different from celebrities. It's just a
matter. Yeah. It's a great point and one that we'd all be wise to remember. We weren't meant to know this much about this many people. It's why when sometimes people say to me, well, do you keep up with your friends from high school? I say, no. Oh, really? You're not on Facebook? You haven't linked with your high school friends? They give you the suggestions like, hey, so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so also graduated Langley High School, class of 1986. And I say, no, I don't keep up with them because I don't really have anything in common with them other than we went to high school together. I have no animus towards them, but I have nothing in common with them. Secondly, I've got no space in my life for them. I have my set of close friends that I want to spend more time with, and I don't have room to include them. So when people say, well, you should get together with your high school friends, I always go, why? Where's that going to go? How will that enrich my life? We weren't necessarily meant to be connected or to watch from afar what they were doing. And yes, I am as bad as anybody when it comes to feeling jealous and envious of, oh my God, look at what this person who I thought was a crayon eating dipshit in high school, look at these photos of their vacation on the Amalfi Coast in Italy with their beautiful kids who are smiling and seemingly attentive. What am I doing in life? See, I don't want that. I know I'll fall victim to my own comparisons. And as some great philosopher once said, comparison is the thief of joy. Thankfully, you're part of the Zabecast community in which none of those bad dynamics exist. You're just part of a group of people who listen to this podcast, who listen to me rant and rave and get some things wrong, but get a lot of things right in life, maybe make you laugh, maybe give you something that you can repeat, a quote that hits home for you. And I appreciate that very much. If you could, if you haven't already, rate and review on your favorite platform, whether it's iTunes or Spotify or whatever. It helps with the algorithm because we're all living under the steel-toed boot these days of the algorithm. It helps other people find this podcast who may have never known me from my previous lives doing radio in Washington, D.C., Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and nationally at various venues. Thanks for listening. Have yourself a great Monday, everybody. And as I like to say, we will see you next time. You know what I love about baseball? There's a game every single day. That's not a complaint. That's a gift. And right now you've got playoff basketball and playoff hockey running alongside the everyday of baseball. That's not a sports calendar, my friends. That's a buffet. MyBookie.ag has all of it. And if you're new, here's the deal. Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. First bet loses, they give you the money back, up to $500 in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for signing up. One rollover, that's it. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Now, go find a game.